Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
You know, I've always said that when a big trade goes down, I'll get to Rick. Clones, relax. We're going to get there. We're going to play his videos on the CBS Sports Network. In the meantime, you should go look for them yourself. Check him out on Twitter. I'll put it up on my feed, too. We will get there. In terms of the top story, you know, I've always said that when a big trade goes down in sports, sometimes people can get carried away in their reactions, their immediate reactions. Their emotions get the best of them, and they come up with a snap reaction that, in the heat of the moment, it feels right, but in hindsight, it turns out to be all wrong because they did not consider all the factors. As an example, for a few weeks now, I've been waiting for that moment when the Texans traded DeAndre Hopkins and a fourth-round pick for David Johnson and a second-round pick and a fourth. I've been waiting on that moment, like when we all realize, what exactly did Bill O'Brien see that none of us saw? What does Bill O'Brien know that nobody else knows? Because everybody I know absolutely rips that move to shreds. Finally, somebody has stepped forward to defend Bill O'Brien. And that somebody is none other than Bill O'Brien. On a conference call with reporters, O'Brien, the trade evaluator, gave O'Brien, the GM, a thumbs up for the trade, where he somehow managed to just give away a future Hall of Famer. Quote, this is what O'Brien had to say about the deal. Quote, David Johnson is a three-down back who has had some very productive years. The type of guy he is, I'm so excited about having him, Randall Cobb, Brandon Cooks in our locker room, end quote. Right, Billy. He did have some productive years. A few years back, several years back. Again, I like David Johnson. He has a really cool story. He's always showed up really well on this show. But he hasn't really showed up on the field lately due to injuries. He had more than 2,100 yards from scrimmage in 20 TDs in 2016. And he's had about as many yards and fewer TDs in the 3 years since then. I mean, 2016 was so long ago that I almost have to do that thing where I tell you what the number one song was that year, just so everybody knows just how long ago that really was. You know who else had a great year in 2016? DeMarco Murray. Remember him? Would you also like to bring him in? So did LeGarrette Blount. My man Matt Forte was solid that year too. Like Doug Martin had some really productive years. So did Michael Turner. With that logic, Bill, you may as well trade Deshaun Watson to get those guys. On top of that, Roger Craig is a three-down back who had some really productive years. You better be working on a deal for him too. You just traded DeAndre Hopkins in his prime for a running back with a massive contract who is way past his prime. And O'Brien knows he's taking some heat for it.
I feel really good about when we looked at the analytics of it based on the production that was leaving our team and the production that we were bringing in and then what we were able to do. Again, it's very incomplete, and we have several roster moves left to go, including a draft.
All right, so there's a lot going on in there, and none of it's good. First, there's the fact that he, quote, feels really good about his team. Really good. Like, exactly what is there to feel really good about? You mean that same team that had a 24-point lead in a playoff game and somehow managed to get outscored 51-7 the rest of the way? You feel good about that team? You feel good about a team that just did that. And that team still had DeAndre Hopkins, and now it doesn't. But you feel good about that team. How the hell do you feel good about that team? And what exactly are the analytics that say it's good business to trade a star receiver who wants a raise for a running back who might already be breaking down, who already has a big contract? How does that one grade out in a good way for you? What exactly do the analytics say about that? But Bill O'Brien's take right now, of course, is, hey, everybody slow down. Pump the brakes. We're not done yet. We've got some more moves and the draft coming up. What, so we can't evaluate that trade until you're done making all your moves? unless you have some deal to trade David Johnson back to Arizona for DeAndre Hopkins, I'm pretty sure there's not a move that you can make that can undo or erase the damage that's already been done. And why don't we just zoom out on this idea that we have several other roster moves still to go? I mean, what is that, a threat or a promise? Because the threat or the promise of you making even one more move is the worst news that any Texan fan could receive. Based on your history, William, saying you have several roster moves to go is not going to make anybody feel any better. It's not going to make anybody feel good or give anybody any confidence at all. It won't make anybody think anything other than you're just going to continue to wreck what's left of your franchise. It sounds like this guy's practically shouting, "Hey, y'all, watch this. If you thought the Hopkins trade was bad, check out what I'm about to do next. If you thought trading a star wide receiver for a running back and not getting at least a first-round pick back was bad, wait until I trade Deshaun Watson for a second-string linebacker and J.J. Watt for a kicker." And his, "let's just let it all play out" defense is his best yet. That's some grade-A spin right there. Like, it may look like I have absolutely no idea what the hell I'm doing, and this trade may be terrible right now, but give me another 3 years as GM and head coach, and then come back and we'll talk about it. Let's check it out when this running back that I traded for, who's already way past his prime, is in his 30s. That's when we'll be able to evaluate it. In fact, you know what? Just give me 10 more years. Give me 10 more years on this job. Then we can all circle back and get together in April of 2030 and look back on that trade. Then you can grade me. Let it all play out. Hey, Bill, if you're coming off a gutting playoff loss and you chase that with arguably the worst trade ever, you better have a really good way of defending it, and this ain't it. If your best defense is to say that the guy you brought in had a few good years a few years back, and you're still going to make more horrible moves, and we need to give it a few more years before we know if the trade really was that bad, then the trade already is really that bad. Stop defending the trade. Stop making other trades like it. Stop thinking you're Bill Belichick. Stop treating the rest of us like we're idiots, and stop giving away Hall of Famers. Royce White is my guest. Royce, it's really nice to have you on. Let me first start off by asking, how are you and everybody around you doing during the middle of this global pandemic?
Well, I think everybody's doing this as well as they can. These are definitely uncharted times. So, you know, we're maintaining and trying to follow all the precautions that are being told to us and, you know, make our way through.
Good. Good. Royce White, my guest. Earlier this month, you tweeted, and I want to read the quote, "This coronavirus situation has my anxiety on overdrive. To those out there suffering from mental health conditions, I know this is an extremely uncertain time, but we can persevere. Send some extra encouragement to anybody you know is struggling. The fight continues," end quote. So how have you been dealing with everything that's going on without getting overwhelmed? And then what is the message?
Well, I think at certain times I've been overwhelmed. At certain times I haven't been, and I think that's probably the case for a lot of people. You know, I think situations like this really, once again, as I've been an advocate for, call into question how we really view mental health and the human psychology and all those things. You know, 10 weeks ago, a lot of people would have, you know, made fun of or called people germaphobes, and now those same people are walking around with masks and hand sanitizer in their back pocket. So it's you know, it's an interesting situation all the way around the board, and you know, I would just advise people that are struggling with their sanity in this time to reach out to other people, however that can happen, physically or remotely, whether it's people that are already in their home or, you know, remotely people who are outside. So
Royce White joining us. I want to go back a little bit for people. I think there are a lot of people familiar with parts of your story, but I think it'd be good for people to see some of the larger picture. As an example, in high school, you were diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. I bring that up because you've been at the forefront among athletes talking about mental health for a long time. What do you remember about receiving that initial diagnosis? Was it scary, or in a way, was it comforting because you then knew that you were not alone?
At that time at 16 years old, it was just a form of relief because I was having panic attacks every day. And, you know, panic attacks from a physical standpoint manifest the same symptoms as heart attack. And so, you know, for people who are having them, especially a young person who has never had them, thinks that they're dying and rightfully so. In fact, you usually have to go to the ER to rule out that you're not dying from a clinical standpoint. So, you know, the diagnosis was just a relief. I hadn't yet thought about myself in the larger scheme of society and other people having that disorder yet. That would come a little bit later.
Hey, Clones, I've got a great new read for you, a tremendous new book. One with a story that takes you on an action-packed wilderness adventure deep into the wilds of Alaska. Today's podcast is sponsored by Stonecross, the adrenaline-fueled new book by Mark Cameron. He is the best-selling author of the latest Tom Clancy, Jack Ryan character novels. In Stonecross, an Alaskan resident with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Mark Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail, and he brings this explosive authenticity to Stonecross as you follow U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter on a manhunt through the untamed landscape of the Alaskan bush. Big storms, predatory animals, dark old-growth trees, and deep frigid waters could prove just as deadly as your target. Stonecross by Mark Cameron is available right now on Amazon.com and everywhere books are sold. Visit MarkCameronBooks.com for more info. Mark, M-A-R-C, CameronBooks.com. Royce White's joining us. So then you went to the University of Minnesota and then Iowa State. At Iowa State, you played for Fred Hoiberg, and the story goes that you became something of a hero on campus because of how you spoke out about mental health. What was that experience like, and what did it mean to you to become a role model for people to know that they were not alone?
Well, you know, Iowa State embraced me, and, you know, it was through the leadership of Fred Hoiberg and the other people in the athletic department as well. But you mainly Fred. I mean, he is, you know, the mayor, as they say, down in Ames. And I think his approach to me, you know, even though, you know, I know the Sports Illustrated article recently said that he went through great lengths to accommodate me, it really wasn't great lengths. It was just simple things like, hey, let's keep in touch with the doctor. Let's make sure the trainer, the doctor, and I are all have an open line of communication. And whatever we can do that seems reasonable, like let him drive to Missouri if he wants to, then we'll do that. And I think his heart condition and the fact that he comes from his own life experience with you know, great medical issue and great medical consequences, he just had a respect for it that allowed him to be able to, you know, me and him to gel well.
Talking to Royce White. So then you had that big season in 2011-2012. Hoiberg was starting to hype you as a lottery pick. You declare for the draft, and then you start to get the sense that maybe the NBA teams were not quite as open about mental health. What were you hearing from teams, and what was that entire experience like?
Yeah, well, I mean, right away, even before the season had ended, once my name was hitting the draft board, there was some talk about me being drafted. The media had already, you know, descended and started to ask the question, a rightful question of how did the NBA view mental health? How did professional sports view mental health for that matter? Did they, you know, view it as this uncharted territory because many people hadn't talked about it yet? Or were they clumping it in with character issues? And I think the second ended up being more true. And that was my experience through the draft process is I always felt like I was under interrogation about mental health and about my anxiety, the same way a guy would be under interrogation if he had some type of, you know, legal or drug issue. And the drug issue would actually fall back in the mental health category in a lot of ways. And in some cases, so with some of the legal issues. But I didn't have those issues at the time. And the questioning certainly wasn't of, you know, that line of thought. It was more like we don't know about anxiety and you're bringing a dangerous element to, you know, our league.
Royce White joining us. You know, the conversation right now is so different now than it was then, and you're a large part of that. But to that point you just made that you're bringing a dangerous element to our league, I mean, could you have made a lot more money if you never said anything about mental health? And in fact, did anybody ever tell you, you know what, you're better off keeping this to yourself. Do not talk about this because you might actually be risking your basketball career. Did that come up?
Yes and yes. It was advised to me by my agent not to talk in these interviews, and I don't know if people know, but you go through a bunch of pre-draft interviews both in the city and Chicago at the Combine, and at all of them I took the approach that I was going to be 100% honest about what I knew at such a young age about anxiety and mental health in general. So I was willing to dialogue with the GMs and executives as much as they wanted to. There was nothing I was keeping from them, and that was against the suggestion of my agent at the time. He said to, you know, keep the conversation short. And, yeah, I mean, I think I could have made a couple $100 million. I mean, anybody who's in the league now who has my skill set, You know, whether you go Draymond Green and Ben Simmons, LeBron, Giannis, anybody who has an extremely gifted body as well as skill set and feel for the game made upwards of $100 million. And I don't think that I would have been any different. So, you know.
So, Royce, why did you choose to speak out even knowing what it might cost you?
Well, I mean, there's two main reasons. Number one is for myself personally, and this would be my recommendation to anybody struggling with mental health issues, is that the first step is honesty. And you hear that a lot in addiction recovery, right? It's like you have to admit there's a problem. Well, that goes for all of us with our mental health in all of life, is you have to be willing to confront that there actually is something that you're at least struggling with. And that'll be the way that you're able to actually reach out for help, inform your loved ones, you know, get any medication you may need, change your lifestyle accordingly. So for me, I kind of understood at that age from having been at Iowa State and dealt with it in an honest way that keeping a big secret from the NBA, number one, was impossible because I'd already gone public with it. But trying to even, you know, hide in the shadows with my anxiety on the public stage would cause great friction and ultimately probably more anxiety. And secondly, and this is why I think myself and the NBA had a huge issue, was that once I started to have conversations with the NBA, I think I realized and I had an intuition that me challenging the mental health culture also inadvertently challenged the meta structure around sports in general. And that was just off limits. You know, that was going to be a no-go on their side of things. So,
Royce White joining us. So, Royce, when did you first get involved in MMA, and what did you like about that?
Yeah, I mean, I've been a boxing MMA fan since I was a very, very young child, as long as I can remember, where I came up in the 90s. So, you know, Mike Tyson era, and I first got turned on to MMA probably around 12 or 13, called a Pride fight or so. I think it might have been Fedor Emelianenko at the time. Might have called Crow Cop fighting a few times, Rampage. I remember one watching Mirko Crow Cop fight Bob Sapp, and at that age you're just thinking, how is this guy going to, you know, why are these two guys even fighting each other? And then Mirko, you know, knocks him out in spectacular fashion. So, you know, I've always just been fascinated by the sport, and, you know, the discipline of martial arts intrigues me as well, so.
So, like, Royce, from the outside, it would seem like, and this from the outside, the possibility of getting punched in the face repeatedly might cause some anxiety. You know, what about the experience of fighting and sparring and everything that comes along with it? Does that create any additional anxiety for you, or on some level, is it calming? What's it like?
Yeah, well, so far it's been a great resource for my anxiety. You know, just the training regimen and the things that go into it, you know, really release or relieve a lot of my anxiety. You know, I think people just don't really understand and haven't yet grasped that anxiety, depression, PTSD, any of these mental health conditions aren't going to fit into a box that you, you know, can keep in your closet and pull out when you want to. They're going to be, you know, dynamic and you know, a little all over the place. I mean, for example, you know, some people get great anxiety from being around people. Some people have to be around people. I mean, I can't give you a better example than that right there of just how dynamic the mind can be.
You know, you've been a leader when it comes to mental health for a long time now. So what would you say to somebody who might be listening, who feels like they might be living with anxiety or something else, but they have not yet told anybody?
Yeah. If you think you're struggling with an issue, get help. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting help, but most of us need help. And the mind is certainly going to be no different. In fact, the mind is probably going to be the place where you need the most help. And, you know, for me, leaning into the anxiety, being even more open and honest about it and ultimately becoming an advocate has really helped me grow as a person into a person that I really am proud of. You know, I'm proud that I stood up for mental health. I'm proud that I told the NBA, hey, listen, this is the issue that we can't overlook. You know, we can't gerrymander the rest of the sports world. We can't gerrymander. And really the rest of society is where my advocacy has led to. And all of that is a product of me leaning into having an issue and being able to see myself and others and things of that nature.
You bet. Listen, this is really important before we go. I think there's a second component to the conversation, though. There might be somebody listening right now who has or will be approached by somebody for help by a friend or a family member, how should that person hear and respond to the request for help and do it in a way that does not dismiss or neglect the person asking?
Well, imagine that you're in the scariest place you've ever been in, and you need one person, and the next person you reach out to will be the only person that you reach out to. And if they can't help you, or if they can't find some compassion, then you may not make it. That's what you should assume you are, because at some point you will be. And if you fail to realize that, then you're a fool.
Royce White joining us. Royce, before you go, I want to make sure we got that in. So let me just double back really quickly to MMA from a purely, and thanks for your thoughts on that, from a purely physical standpoint, what's it been like for you to learn jiu-jitsu and working with your body in ways that you were not when you were playing basketball?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, the MMA piece has been like a dream come true. You know, hats off to my coach, Greg Nelson, and everybody at the academy, my training partners, Troy Jones and John Castaneda and all of these guys. You know, they accepted me with open arms. And the moment I showed up at the gym, which I just did spontaneously one day and said, hey, I'm going for this, they could have, you know, laughed. They could have turned me around. They could have said, you know, you're not going to be able to do what you're setting out to do, and that may have been the end of it. Probably not. I probably would have tried to go somewhere else. But, you know, the fact that they embraced me with open arms has been a dream come true, and to be able to learn the things that I've watched from people who really know what they're doing has been incredible. And you know, the heavyweight division is in serious trouble. They're in serious trouble. They have no idea, you know, what it takes to be an elite basketball player, number one, but what it takes to be a versatile elite basketball player. That, you know, people talk about strength and size and speed, but they forget the things like creativity and vision and, you know, tempo and rhythm. And those are all things that I'm very, very, very gifted at. So,
Michael Malone. Michael, it is great to have you back. Before we talk about the season and life in general, how are you and your family doing right now?
Well, first of all, Jim, thanks for having me on again. Always enjoy being on with you. Big fan of yours. And I appreciate you asking about my family. You know, we're doing well. I think we've adopted the mindset of we are all, as a nation and the world in totality, going through a very tough time. So how do we find positives during this tough time? And for me, definitely grateful for my wife, my two daughters, spending so much time with them and kind of reconnecting, being a husband, being a father, while staying connected to all of our players, coaches, and employees with the Denver Nuggets. So I look forward to the day when we can get through this and get back to doing what we all love to do. But in the interim, we're making the best of a tough situation.
Michael Malone, my guest. Michael, let me also point out, I appreciate you. I appreciate this relationship very much, and I appreciate you coming back on. Now, you were born in Queens. You have a lot of family in the New York City area, the epicenter of it all right now. So what's it been like for you to witness what's happened there?
Yes, it's definitely scary, concerning. You know, my mother and father are back in New York. They live up in Westchester, so they're very close to it, you know. And obviously, as you have older parents, you get even more concerned. But they have done their job of quarantining, limiting their social distancing, and knock on wood, Jim, I appreciate you asking. They're doing well. But as you mentioned, New York, the whole metro area is just became the epicenter in the world of all these coronavirus cases and then the amount of people that have been passing away from it. So such a sad, sad thing. And as I mentioned earlier, hopefully sooner rather than later, we can, you know, find a vaccine and get through this and get through it together.
Nuggets head coach Michael Malone, my guest. You also mentioned, Michael, at the very top, that it's a scary time and a challenging time, but you want to try and stay positive. I know you're somebody always looking for that silver lining. You joke that you and your daughter have been playing a lot of volleyball. How's your volleyball game right about now? And then, even more importantly, what's it like to spend more time with them, time that you ordinarily otherwise would not have this time of year?
Well, it's great. It really is. Do I miss the games? I mean, the playoffs will be starting tomorrow. Do I miss that? Do I miss the ramp-up, the preparation, everything that goes into it? Without a doubt. But on the flip side of that, I have not had this many sit-down dinners with my family, I don't think, ever. And I have a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old daughter. They're big volleyball players, so when the weather permits, we're outside in the back playing. When the weather doesn't permit, we have a makeshift court in the house, and we find ways to play. And they're my coaches. My wife played volleyball in college. My girls have taken it up to follow in her footsteps. So they all help me out. But I think all the hours that I've been playing volleyball has definitely improved, but I'm still not any good.
Michael Malone joining us. Listen, I don't want to pry, but it's really interesting because when you're as locked in as you are, especially this time of year, you're so right about those dinners. I would say the same thing about my family. I've never had so many sit-down dinners with my two sons and my wife. Like, Michael, what are those dinners like for you? What do you guys talk about? What's the experience like?
Well, I'll tell you, one thing is, and I'm not embarrassed to say it because I'm a very honest person. I haven't made one dinner.
Yeah.
I'll start off there. My wife has made every dinner that we sat down with, and she has taken this hiatus to broaden her cooking skills and trying new things. But, you know, some nights we talk about our daughters in the online school. You know, what are they working on? What kind of projects? And that's tough, right? Put yourself in a young boy, young girl's shoes. You can't go to school. You can't see your friends. You can't play your sports. You can't go to your graduation, your prom. That's a lot. Those are some of my best memories that's been taken away from so many high school kids. And that's a shame, but also understandable. But, you know, talk about, you know, are they staying in touch with their friends? Talk about what's going on in their worlds, because, you know, for us as adults, this is a lot easier to handle than it is for a young child. And so we've been playing board games. We play Uno. We sit down. We talk. We have fun. And that's been by far the biggest silver lining, Jim, is the quality family time and just, you know, really being a father and a husband. And during the season, you really, that's limited. And that's the nature of the beast, and we all understand that.
Nuggets head coach Michael Malone joining us once again. It's funny you mentioned that because I went to the mailbox yesterday, and sure enough, there was a package. Some friends had sent us the board game Risk. I love the point you made, too, about the kids, that it's so hard. You know, as adults, we should better understand, or we do better understand what it's like, but the kids don't really understand. I think as we sometimes lose patience with our kids, that's a great reminder. It's tougher on them because they're younger. So, Michael, it's clear that you're connecting with your family. What about your extended family? What about your team? How have you gone about connecting with your players at this time? And what are the things that you're communicating about? For instance, is it about basketball? Is it about staying in shape and staying ready? Or are you trying to connect with them more on a mental and emotional level during this time?
Yeah, I think it's a combination, Jim. It's so obviously today's society, you know, phone calls, text messages, you have the ability to Zoom. You know, I didn't know what Zoom was until the last month when, you know, now Zoom is in everybody's vernacular because that's what this situation is calling for. But I think my conversations are based on, first and foremost, how are you, the person, how is your family in your respective cities and your respective countries? How are they doing? How are they handling this pandemic we're all going through? And then you kind of shift towards the basketball. But it's always, for me, the person first. And then, you know, it's the hardest part, and I think as you talk to any professional athlete, coach right now, or anybody for that matter, is stay ready. But the hard part, Jim, is what are we preparing for? Will there be an NBA season? And if there is, which I hope there will be, what is that season going to look like? You know, there's been a lot of talk recently about having maybe a month-long ramp-up to get ready for some kind of condensed season into a playoffs. So it's hard to tell a player, you know, you don't want to go 1,000% right now because we could still be another month, month and a half, 2 months out if there is even a season to be had. So lots of different topics, but again, how are they doing as people? How are they keeping themselves entertained and that kind of stuff? Same thing with my coaching staff. Same thing with Tim Connelly in our front office, Josh Kroenke, our owner. Just staying connected and making sure we're all caring for each other.
We're talking to Michael Malone. All really interesting points. Now, Rick Carlisle was on the show, Michael, earlier this week, and we talked about that March 11th game that turned out to be the final game before the season was suspended. When you look back on that game, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Yeah, it was kind of surreal. You know, we go into the game kind of oblivious to, you know, kind of what's going on. And then all of a sudden, I think at halftime is when I had heard that they had canceled the Utah Jazz game. I think it was Utah versus OKC. And so Tim Connelly, who was at that game in Dallas, as I'm walking out towards the court to start the second half, he grabbed me and said, "Hey, just to give you a heads up, they just canceled the Utah Jazz game. Rudy Gobert tested positive for coronavirus." And I was like, wow, this is kind of crazy. And then I'd say maybe first time out, second time out of that third quarter, our trainer, Dan Szymanski, says to me, Coach, just give you a heads up. They're canceling the, you know, they're suspending the season. And here we are. We're still in the middle of a game. And you're trying to win a game, but you're also in the back of your mind thinking about a much bigger picture of what not only the NBA is about to embark upon, but what we are going through as a society. So, yes, we lost. And after the game, you know, disappointed that we lost because I hate to lose. But then you also have to take a step back as a leader and as a coach to provide a much bigger picture. Yeah, we lost tonight, but, you know, this is about us getting healthy, getting home, and kind of waiting to see what happens. And we're still in that wait-and-see mode right now, and that's probably the most difficult thing for all of us because we're athletes, we're competitors, and we want to get back at it, but it has to be at the right time when it's going to be safe for everybody.
Michael Malone joining us. You know, you talk about that wait, Michael. I thought Doc Rivers had an amazing line. He said that right now we're all trying to win the wait. I mean, isn't that pretty much what it comes down to? Like, you don't know exactly when it's going to end or how it's going to start up and what it's going to look like. You're just trying to win the wait. That's not easy.
No, it's not. And I think Doc makes a great point. I'd read that. You know, that was kind of his slogan for their group. And you know, that makes a lot of sense. You know, you can approach this a lot of different ways. You can sit there and feel sorry for yourself. You can get frustrated. Or you can find a way to make it a positive. You can stay in shape. You can broaden yourself. You can... You know, we have a player in our team, Vlatko Chanchar, doesn't play a lot, great kid. He's learning Japanese right now. I mean, using this time, Paul Millsap on our team has taken up magic. He's like a magician now. So what are you doing? If you're just sitting around every day waiting for something to change, well, you have to be the spark that ignites that change. You have to bring about change in yourself. And so I think that's how you win the wait. And for me, it's family time. It's when the weather permits, getting outside on my bike and getting my exercise in, getting my mind right. It's staying in touch with all those that I care about and that I love and preparing for a season that's going to start at some point so we can kind of hit the ground running.
I love it. Michael, one last thought. You were recently telling a story about being a ball boy at Syracuse when Pearl Washington was there. For those who do not know, what was it like to watch a legend like Pearl?
Oh, man, it's funny. Even before he got to Syracuse, some of my greatest memories, you know, I'm one of six kids, and, you know, I'm the only one that followed in my father's footsteps in terms of being a basketball coach. And my father and I have always been very close. And when he was a college coach working for Jim Boeheim at Syracuse, he was always recruiting the players in New York City. And so I would go with him. He'd take me in the car, and I got a chance to see Kenny Smith, Mark Jackson, Pearl Washington, Billy Donovan, just really, really good high school players. And I saw Pearl when he was in high school, a boys and girl, and he was phenomenal. And that Syracuse, the ball handling, the control, how smooth he was as a player, didn't translate to the NBA, unfortunately, but in college, he's one of the most dominant college players that I've ever seen. And the shot that I alluded to when they beat Boston College in the Carrier Dome, it was so loud in there, Jim. There's a picture of the Boston College bench, and the players are covering their ears. And he was a special, special player, and just thankful that I had a chance to see him play in his prime.
It's amazing. One quick follow, Michael. What about, it's one of my favorite topics, but in terms of power forwards, what about DC? What about Derek Coleman? How special a talent and a force was he when he was right?
Oh, he was, you know, he was a power forward that could do it all. I mean, shoot from the perimeter, score with his back to the basket, and I think what I always appreciated about DC's game was the ability to handle the ball. The playmaking ability, he had a real style to his game, and he could do it all. And obviously, he wasn't afraid to tell you he could do it all. And you know, just a great, great talent. Big fan of Derek Coleman all along.
I loved him. What about Billy Owens? You want to talk about a unique talent and a guy with a very different skill set? How about him?
But it's funny you bring his name up. I go back to the famous five-star basketball camps that Howard Garfinkel ran for years, and. My father was a part of that. That's how he got to know Hubie Brown and a lot of those coaches and got in that five-star kind of fraternity. And I used to go to that camp probably 6 weeks of summer, 4 weeks in Pittsburgh, and then they had a couple of other weeks in Honesdale, PA, up in the mountains. And I was a waiter. If you were a waiter at the camp, you know, you worked. You had to clean up the cafeteria after the meals. That took off some of the camp tuition. And I was a waiter with Billy Owens. Same time with Alonzo Mourning was there, Conrad McRae, some of these just great players of that time, Brian Reese and Adrian Autry from Tallentine. And just getting to know Billy Owens, Carlisle, PA, play for Coach Lebo, whose son was Jeff Lebo, played at North Carolina. Billy Owens was another silky smooth small forward that was a hell of a player. And getting to know him, he was a class act as well.
Michael, I'm trying to let you go, but you keep saying really interesting things. So one last follow. You mentioned Hubie Brown. And when I listen to Hubie, even at this age, I'm blown away by what he says even now. How do other coaches, people at your level, elite level, view Hubie Brown?
Oh, he's an icon. He's definitely a coaching legend. The success that he had in the ABA, the success that he had in the NBA, obviously is personal for me because Hubie is a guy that I got to know. He hired my father with the New York Knicks, and my father was a head coach at University of Rhode Island. And anytime you listen to Hubie do a game, you know, growing up, he's a guy that he sees the game in a different manner, and he breaks it down for the even people that are not basketball people to understand. True tactician of the game, one of the best clinicians I think that's ever been around, he's a guy that I think a lot of people look at as a source of great knowledge on the game of basketball and his ability to teach it at a high, high level.
If you want the entire televised horse experiment, though, summed up in one single audio clip, here it is.
Did you make that?
Now, that one went in. Yes, I did.
That's the voice of Chauncey Billups asking Mike Conley if Mike made the shot that he was attempting. And that about says it all, does it not? Because the video throughout this entire competition was so bad, so choppy, so grainy, so glitchy, that everybody watching, including the participants, had to just take the shooter's word for it on makes and misses. Yo, man, did you make that? Oh, yeah, I made that. You did? Of course, man. Didn't you see it? No. Like, never a good thing when an entire game predicated on makes and misses could never ever clearly show and consistently show the makes and misses when the game is predicated on makes and misses. So, Horse was widely clowned as a failure. But then again, how badly can you kill something when there's nothing else to watch? However, what if I told you that somebody actually counter-programmed against Horse? What if I told you that somebody decided to broadcast their own sports content and go right at ESPN? And to broadcast their own sports content right at the same time ESPN was airing theirs? What if I said that? Ladies and gentlemen, enter the unlikely hero of Thursday night, Garrett Ryan Ritt.
It's lit!
Yeah, I did. Yes, I just hit this dude with his full government because he deserves it. If you're new around here, Garrett Ritt is a member of the XR4TI. He was quickly glossed Ike for his striking resemblance to Dwight Eisenhower. If you've got a dime in your back pocket, pull it out right now. Take a look at who's on it. It's Ritt! Ever since showing up around here, ever since arriving in this building, Ike has quickly revealed himself to be even more interesting than that old guy in the Dos Equis commercials. He eats candy for breakfast. He's in a men's bowling league. In fact, I think several. He owns his own bowling ball, his own bowling shoes, his own wrist thing. He's got a handicap. This dude was the commissioner of an adult kickball league. Not only was he proudly trumpets that fact on his LinkedIn profile. He not only is not hiding from it, he wants you to know it. And it's the same guy who once hit me with a game on blast to start the show. A show that I've been hosting just fine without him or his pep talks for 30 years now.
He is the most interesting man in the world.
And just when you think that Ike cannot possibly add any more accidental content to the program. This guy shows up and goes legend yesterday by posting two different videos from his driveway playing a game of horse against himself. If you don't have CBS Sports Network fired up, go to my Twitter feed right now. I've put the videos up so you can follow along with the magic, because you're going to want to follow along with the magic. You need to see this. This is one of those "where were you now" moments when you first saw this video. Ike in the driveway with basketball shorts and laced up sneaks about to put on a clinic. The first video is captioned with the following, quote, "Round the back, through the legs, lefty off the bank, nothing but net, who's next? Hashtag horse, hashtag quarantine life, hashtag game on." I love the hashtag game on. Man, it fires me up in a way that nothing ever has. Fires me up in a way that nothing has fired me up in the past three decades. Now to the video.
Mark it down. That's an H.
Are you watching on CBS Sports Network? You have to. Are you watching on CBS Sports Network? The video is incredible. Ike goes behind the back like he said he would. Behind the back, then jumps maybe 6 feet off the earth, puts the rock between his legs mid-flight, and finishes with his offhand off the backboard, just like the caption says. It actually is not the worst move ever, but his bleep talking to nobody at all is. First, there's the goosh, goosh, goosh. That's the sound of an old guy letting you know that he made his shot and pimping it straight into your ear hole. Goosh. Then there's Ritt running from the baseline back towards the camera, pointing into the soul of everybody watching, all nine of you, and saying, "Mark it down, that's an H.
Mark it down, that's an H.
Mark it down, that's an H.
Mark it down, that's an H."
Hey, Ritt, who are you talking crap to? Who's marking down what? Who got that H? Who are you even playing? Who are you talking junk to, old man?
Mark it down, that's an H.
Ask yourself this. How old were you when you stopped playing against imaginary opponents in your driveway? 11? 12? Not Ritt. He's pushing 70, and homeboy is still lighting up made-up defenders and talking junk. And he was not done. There's more. Video 2 is every bit as good. And instead of telling us what he was going to do in the caption, he just voiced it out instead.
Off the roof, one-handed, behind the head, backboard.
Boom! Are you watching this video? CBS Sports Network. If you're not, get your ass to my Twitter feed and you do it right now. Boom! Boom! The best part. I don't even know where to start. Is there a best part? Every part's the best part. The best part about Ritt's videos is you don't need to see them to know the result. He lets you know the result. First it was goosh. Then it was boom. Boom. You heard him say it in the video. Off the roof, one-handed, behind the head, backboard. And then he nails it. Nails it. The only thing better than the trick shot was the caption. The caption reads, and I quote, follow me here, quote, "Tell me why ESPN didn't select me for the horse competition again. You're up next, Chauncey Billups, Zach LaVine, Mike Conley, and Allie Quigley. Hashtag ratings gold." Goosh. Who the hell is this guy? A member of my crew just called out an entire network and four professional basketball players to play him in horse.
Mark it down. That's an H.
And I think he's serious. Now, since these videos were published to a very public platform, there was some scrutiny that came along with them. And I want to say for the 1,000,000th time, I do not condone personal appearance smack. It is not show fodder. However, let he who is without body fat cast the first fat joke. And here's what I mean by that. 5 days ago, it was again writ, who was watching Horace on ESPN and tweeted the following, quote, Paul Pierce looks ridiculously out of shape. Come on, Truth. You had this entire lockdown to hit the elliptical. Put the work in. Koosh. Writ telling Paul Pierce to put the work in. Well, if you want to see a boomerang hit somebody right in the face, check out the comments off of Ritt's second video. I'm not going to read them here because I don't do that kind of thing, but let's just say that Ritt's midsection physique was a major topic, a big, big topic. Like I've always said to everybody listening to the program, unless you are 2% body fat, you better keep that junk to yourself. That includes you, Ritt. You called out Paul Pierce, and look what happened to you. Here's the main takeaway. Because I don't want to lose sight of this. Freaking Ike just beat ESPN at their own game. Literally. He went into the driveway with a cell phone and he played horse against himself. And it was 50 times. No, 50 million times more entertaining than anything a Disney-run operation just did with professionals. For starters. One, you could actually see the guy and the ball and the hoop. Two, the commentary was legendary. Goosh! Boom! So go ahead and add his baldness to the list of glosses for Ike, because he earned that. Man, if I could be like Ike.
If I could be like Ike.
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 Be like
Ike. Ike.
Ike.
Yeah, I try. Just need to fly. Just one day if I could.
Can't wait for Disney to break out that 20-part doc on Ike.
A dream I move.
A dream I grew.
Ike.
If I could be like
Ike.
It's Ritt! Garrett, welcome to the program. Welcome to the big time. First things first, how are you and your wife and your daughter doing during these troubling times? I mean, I know you're fine. I see you every single morning smashing Rice Krispie bricks and chocolate milk for breakfast and hooping in the driveway. But more importantly, how is the fam?
They're great, Jim. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me on, finally. It's nice to be on the air once. It's awesome, man. Thanks for that. The family's doing great. Wife couldn't be better. I know she had, you know, some issues a few months back, but she couldn't be better. She's killing it. She's, you know, helping out with the kid every day. You know, having the six-year-old around is a little trying, a weird time for her. But no, man, they're actually teaching school as we speak right now. So
excellent.
Everything's good to go.
That is trying. It is trying to have a six-year-old in the house full time, but nothing compared to being married to you, Ritt. I can only imagine what that's like. Listen, I understand that you've filled your newfound free time at home with bicycling, online poker, and now, of course, a basketball hoop. This basketball hoop is a brand new thing to your house as of this week. How did you get it, and why did you get it?
Yeah, actually, I literally just got that the day before. We talked about the fact that we both have Pelotons, and it's fine. I've been digging the Peloton, but I just don't...
Have you been on that Peloton even once, old man?
I have, here and there. I have. Some video here may prove differently, but it's just not as much as I'd like. My passion is playing hoops. I love playing ball. I normally be out there for a couple days a week, and a friend of a friend of mine told me that he had a buddy who was looking to get rid of his. His daughter had already gone off to college. So I actually got that thing for free just the day before, wheeled it over to the house, and bam, there it was. All of a sudden, I'm playing ball again. It felt good. I had the six-year-old out there. Skylar was playing with me. So a little more normalcy than
I got
before.
One word to say to that. Goosh. Free as me. All right, so I want to be very clear about this. Like, if I were a genius, I would have said, hey, Ritt, I got a great idea for a bit. Get yourself a net, film yourself, roll tape on yourself, and do a bunch of really wacky things. But I didn't need to. You did that all on your own. I happened to find that on social media, and I was like, oh, damn. When and how did you decide and think to yourself, I know what I'll do. I'll film myself playing horse against myself and talk junk to imaginary opponents.
Well, it actually happened because as soon as I posted my picture of having the hoop up on the driveway the day before all this went down, and some of the clones actually compared me and Alvy, saying that he was the basketball player of the show and all this. So I actually started doing this as kind of an homage slash challenge to Alvin. I was going to throw up some shots and see if he could match him. It was kind of in my head that way. And right as I was getting ready to, I made my first shot through the legs. I was coming back. I was getting ready to talk smack to Alvin into the thing, but I didn't know if that was really connected. And so what you heard
Ike,
naturally.
Ike. If it was an homage to Alvin, why did you not tag him, but instead you tagged Mike Conley? Were you feeling that good about yourself?
After I made it, yeah, I kind of was. I'm not going to lie. So, so this is pretty good. You know what? I might do a couple more and just see how it goes.
All right. So now that you have a much bigger platform and you made that shot and you tagged Conley, you've got a chance to address him directly. Now that you have this big platform, what would you like to say to Mike Conley right now?
All right, Mike, good to see you. Congrats on your title. I'm a couple paychecks short of having that beautiful monstrosity of a gym you have there. But I got the game. If you got the game, if you got the time, I'm there. I've got it equipped now. Got the hoop. Game on, man. Bring it.
Ike, the thing is, you're not being ironic. Like, you're serious, aren't you, old man?
I think I can take him. I saw what he has. I mean, he can shoot with his right hand.
Yeah, but I saw what you have, bro. A big-ass gut. Now, do you regret calling out Paul Pierce for his physical appearance when the clones did the same thing to you last night?
Okay. Listen. First, I got three things about that. First,
yeah,
that
I got about 100 things about that, but go ahead.
It's a little bit of bad posture on my part, so I'm not going to lie. I was kind of hunched down. It's not my normal form. I blame the Dr. Pepper can that was holding my phone together and not having the good camera skills and lighting. And, yeah, if I had it all over to do again, to do all over again, I'd probably do a take two. But that shot was not easy to do, so I wasn't going to try it again. I just let it roll as is.
Bro, you're fat.
That hurts. That hurts. Okay, fine. So I eat a couple double lunches.
If you stood straight up, you'd be like 2% body fat. Is that what you're saying?
Well, hold on. Let's see. Look, can you tell?
Sit down, old man.
Look at that. That's slim.
Dude, you are something else. You know, on an incredibly serious note, on a serious note, from me to you and from the entire audience, on a serious note, I have no idea what the hell you do around here, but you might be my best hire ever, Ritt. You might be my best hire ever.
I appreciate that. There's some legends come through here.
But none that can measure up to you. Now, I want to make this very clear, actually, to everybody listening. You are a very, very valued member of this team. You are doing a great job here. You've done an amazing job booking that podcast. You have a great energy about you. You're kind of a caveman. Your diet is terrible. Bro, and by the way, what were you thinking hitting me up with a game on before I started that show that day when I'm in the Hall of Fame and I've done this 30 years and I've known you like maybe 3 weeks?
It felt right. Just
what
felt
right about that? Did I look like I needed that?
You know, I could maybe get a little punch. Can't hurt.
Oh, it
get
hurt,
it going.
Dude. Oh, it hurt. It hurt the way it hurt your status in my eyes. Dude, who are you? Phil Jackson? What are you doing trying to motivate me? I'm Michael Jordan. Who are you?
I kind of feel I'm on this side of the glass. I might have to be a little coach-esque. So, yeah.
That was amazing. Like, what about people, what do they not know that they should know when it comes to eating candy for breakfast and double lunches?
I don't really consider that breakfast, exactly. I don't consider myself eating breakfast. Those are little snacks that I have to get myself through the morning.
What's breakfast then? Do you get?
I don't eat breakfast.
You don't? You just have candy snacks? Bro, what's it like? I'm not saying
you call it breakfast,
vegans.
I call it a snack.
I'm not saying we're all vegans, but what's it like to be in a culture where you're not like any of us? Like, we all try, and you're smashing candy for breakfast. You're not even trying to fit in, bro. What's that like?
I'm just hurt that I can't get my Thai food right now, my three helpings of that I can get. They've actually shut down. My taco place, Gisado's, is shut down. No takeout whatsoever. These are the things that hurt me the most.
Yeah, but so. There's still convenience stores for you to load up on your candy, though, right?
Well, yeah, and I got the endless thing of Skittles here, which is nice.
All right. So finally, it might not be scientifically accurate, but is it psychologically accurate when the clones say that, in effect, you're a little kid trapped in an old man's body? Is that fair?
Shouldn't we all be? Absolutely. I will be till I die.
Don't answer a question with a question, old man. Even a great rhetorical response like that. I'll tell you what, Garrett, that was unbelievable. Congratulations on some of the best video content the jungle has ever had.
Park it down.
We could have some more. Who knows?
No, we don't need any more. We're done. Now you're done.
I got more skills.
Yeah, I figured. Now you're done.
Thank you for having me on. Finally.
Welcome to the jungle. A very good Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. Hope you had a nice weekend. I'd ask you how that weekend was, but I think I already know. I know a lot of you are still home. I know you're into your new routine. You make this part of the routine. That horse competition was not good.
Oh, not good.
Yeah! That's the dog boy, the left hand, reverse on the right.
Wow.
Come on.
What was worse, Pierce's athleticism or the audio? Like, I'm not saying that Pierce seemed old watching that, but I expected him to leave that court in a wheelchair.
Pierce in a lot of pain, had to be carried off, then they put him in the wheelchair.
Horse sucks.
I can see it. You can't hear me?
And by the way, just so we're clear, the issue here is not that Larson was caught.
Kyle, you're talking to everyone.
The issue is that he was doing it. We only know about it because he was caught.
Yep, we heard that.
But it's the dropping slurs that's the problem.
Yikes.
Does that make you just want to go out there and punch the virus right in the face? I got a better idea. Why don't we just stay home? Socially distance. Hopefully eat something with a little bit of color in it.
Blah, blah.
Rick Carlisle.
It's just like doing TV shows, you know, 15 different places in the country. You know, we'll figure it out. I mean, we're a resourceful league. We've got the best commissioner in all of sports. We'll come up with the right equation.
Jedrick Wills Jr.
It's a bummer not to be able to walk across the stage and actually shake the hand of Roger Goodell. But I know there's supposed to be a couple cool things that happen there. I don't want to spoil the surprise.
Nobody knows when this thing's going to end. But at the rate we're going, we're all going to come out of it extremely fat, extremely drunk, extremely stoned, extremely addicted to porn,
sitting in a room watching porno,
and in extreme need of a haircut.
Spending the majority of my time listening to rock and roll, Deep Purple,
yeah.
Led Zeppelin,
Black Sabbath.
Black Sabbath is very good.
How about some Blue Oyster Cult?
They're very good as well.
Former Nuggets GM Arturas Carnage.
Pluto! Is Rich Ackerman reporting from his bathroom or a submarine? Get off his back.
Not familiar where the Pimp in the Box name came from.
You know, back then, it was just me on the radio. Pimp in the Box. Pimping all things that are good. Different breed of cat and worth every penny. Great deal for him. And the team did the right thing by giving it to him. Even if all of you never pay a back, dudes want to hear it. Allen Robinson.
For me, this has been the most fun that I've had in my career. You know, playing for Coach Nagy. He's a coach that you want to play for.
The ones who mount trophy heads in their dens to impress their trophy gals on the depleted size of their humanity.
This is the Jim Rome Show.
That's true, announcer dude. Sports it Radio. Is the Jim Rome Show, starring me, Jim Rome. Dennis Dodd.
We can't have games without fans, and we can't have games without students on campus, because what you're saying is it's not safe for them, but it's safe for the players.
You're not going to have a car in a year if you don't get that thing out once a week. You've got possible bow shaft from your crankshaft to your camshaft to your drive shaft.
Antoine Winfield Jr.
Oh, you have to go hard in the classroom. You know, academics was my first priority. You know, how you do anything is how you do everything.
Who taught you that?
From Coach Fletcher.
Nobody comes to the stadium.
Believe me, as a sports talk show host, I am really looking forward to sports coming back. Believe that. Why don't we say, when we do it the right way.
Whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, because I'm quite sure you'll be bringing home both your shame and your STDs.
He is Wesley Woodyard.
Hey, Jungle. Hey, y'all better wake up, man. Nobody cares if we on a hold as the U.S., as the world. Hey, you are in the jungle. It's a mentality. It's a mindset. Be a jungle cat. Be a jungle lion. Let's go, baby. Wake up.
I was on my last 12 cans. Anyway.
To you, a 12-pack in the fridge is considered a fresh stock. To Olive, it is considered code red. Will Brinson joining us once again. Who uses a mouse with a laptop?
I know. Like, why are you posting these pictures online? It's like Dave Gettleman in a room with, like, one, like, 1997, like, Dell PC with a plugged-in mouse.
Oh, you know what? No. I am too happy.
Actually ridiculous.
You know, Sopranos, these people evolved over time. I mean, Christopher in the first season, in the first episode, was like a kid. Impulsive and rash, and over the 7 seasons, he did grow.
Katie the Lion was reaching out to every sheep, lamb, oxen, fly he could find, and he was concerned, really concerned. Apparently a lot of the time, too. On the call-in line, Digger Phelps.
Every day I get a chance and I flip and see you between the hours of you-know-when to 3 o'clock East Coast time.
If I say worse, he hates me. If I say better, the rest of the jungle hates me.
It'll make you feel better. They all hate you.
Okay. Him and makes them. It better.
Joey Logano, what was your reaction?
I guess, in one word, surprise shouldn't be tolerated in any way. And it just goes to show how fragile all our lives are and how we have to be on brand all the time.
Arthur, you're on the air. Is that, in fact, you?
Jim, I wouldn't mess with any of your guys. You're doing a good deed for all of us in New York going through tough times. I love listening to you. You're a real gentleman.
I had to move because all you guys back there look and act just like Joe Dirt, and all the women in the Midwest look like Popeye.
I got the game. If you got the game, if you got the time, I'm there. I've got it equipped now.
Little kid trapped in an old man's body.
Shouldn't we all be? Absolutely. I will be till I die.
Jim, my pleasure. Best wishes, man.
Damn, where's the ref to break out of?
All the golden tickets.
Beer has vitamins in it.
Give me a little sense of normalcy throughout my day.
Boogers the size of jelly beans.
Surprised I actually got to speak to you. It's not very easy to get these talk show people and stuff.
Game on, man.
Game on.
Bring it.
Good night now! Good night now!